Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, whenever you're listening, and welcome to Tri-State at the Plate. I'm your host, Andy Burdick, joined, as always, by the gondolier of this baseball regatta, Jason Ruggiero.
Good to be here.
I was happy to come up with
that
another...
That was good.
Yeah, did you like that one?
Yeah.
I thought about that one for a couple days. Well, on today's show, we're going to...
Not as good, then.
It took me a couple days to come up with it. On today's show, we're going to talk about... What are we going to talk about today? Oh, we're going to wrap up the Cleveland Indians season.
It's over. That's what we're going to talk about. It's over for everyone.
Cleveland's officially over. Pittsburgh is now officially over as well. So we are day one of no Pittsburgh Pirates baseball. I'm not going to lie. It feels kind of strange.
It takes a little getting used to.
Feels kind of strange. So we're going to talk about life post-Pittsburgh and Cleveland baseball.
Your teams are... It's bad for producing.
Yes.
Pittsburgh Pirates.
It is.
You're over there just like pounding the microphone with these percussive peas.
And I'm very aggressive right now because of that loss yesterday.
Yeah.
Very aggressive. More aggressive than usual. But before we get to the Pirates and Indians, we want to touch on Dusty Baker, who was handed the old pink slip last week.
I miss this. I don't know how.
Living in your dungeon.
I guess.
Apparently you didn't get the tweet about it. So Adam Kilgore of the Washington Post said that Dusty Baker is interested in the Washington Nationals managerial opening. So let me ask you this.
Wait a minute. Dusty Baker would like a new job? Yes, shocking.
He would. He's apparently not ready to retire.
With a team of young players he can mismanage?
he's hoping that Steven Strasburg arm has at least another one or two good seasons in it so that he can run his career into the ground as well.
So
if you were a Nationals fan,
no,
how would you feel about Dusty Baker? No, that's an emphatic no. There are Cubs fans everywhere who are just grabbing their rotator cuffs light right now that are like, we remember, we'll never forget.
What if he comes back to the Cubs?
That'd be great.
What if he sweet talks Theo Epstein?
Oh, I'd love to see what he could ruin there. There's not much to
ruin. I don't know that there's much to ruin there.
I don't know who he would ruin.
I mean, that's why it makes sense to me that the Cubs are talking about... I think they interviewed Manny Acta. That's the guy that you want in that job. No talent. No prospects.
Low expectations.
And then in 2 years when they still stink, you'll fire him. And then he'll spend $20 million at offseason and win 20 more games the next year. And be like, see, I told you he stinks. Or with the Nationals. After you fire him, you draft Steven Strasburg and Bryce Harper. And Ryan Zimmerman finally gets healthy. And you're like, see, I told you that guy didn't know what he was doing.
It's all Maniac. He has no idea what he's doing out there.
So that's poor Maniac.
That's a big no on Dusty Baker, huh? You don't want him anywhere near your franchise?
No.
Think he's a little too nuclear, huh?
I think he's nuts.
You think he's nuts?
Not only does he continue to play, what's that guy, Ryan Hannigan?
Ryan Hannigan?
Yeah. Instead of Devin Mesoraco. My point is not that Devin Mesoraco is a great, amazing Hall of Fame baseball player. My point is he can't be any worse than Ryan Hannigan.
I will say, in Hannigan's defense, he does have pretty good defensive metrics. He's a very good defensive catcher.
He better.
Because he's not a very good offensive
My
catcher.
My point is that... Yeah. Devin Mesoraco, he's got to be able to hit 220. I mean, I don't even have the stats. He's got to be able to hit 220.
Deep in his soul, he has the capability to hit 220.
And here's the upshot on Devin Mesoraco. He might get better.
There is a chance of, now that is a very valid point. There is a chance that Devin Mesoraco could potentially get better.
Ryan Hannigan.
We know what Ryan Hannigan is.
What you get with Ryan Hannigan. Ryan Hannigan is the kind of guy that's going to go and play for Joe Madden, and he's going to hit like 320 because Joe Madden's only going to use him between the seventh and eighth inning against lefties who wear rec specs.
I was going to say with last names that start with W.
But you know what I mean? He's like, he's going to run the numbers, and he's like, come on board here, Hannigan. We'll find
use of you.
You can play first, left, third, and second too, right?
I wish Dan Johnson listened to our podcast because he'd probably be like, yeah, that's right.
He's like, yeah, I know. Preaching to the choir.
That's right. They found value in me.
Oh.
Yeah,
no.
Well, I agree. I think
no to Dusty Baker. If you know what's good for you.
As a Pirates fan, loathe Dusty Baker.
As a Pirates fan, you should be scared.
Because they
that
might,
the Reds might get a competent manager.
They might get a manager. They're going to get a manager who's not Dusty Baker.
What if they get Sandy Alomar?
Ooh.
The Cubs are hinting around about trying to interview Sandy Alomar again.
That seems like a very Theo Epstein kind of move.
We'll get to Sandy Alomar, what's going on with him later. But
so
if I were you, I would be, this is 2 years in a row the Pirates' playoff chances have been hurt by what's going on in other places. Last year, they took the Astros away from you, so you can't beat up on the Astros anymore. This year, what's his face? Walt Jocketty? Is he still the Reds GM?
The general manager? That sounds right. Yeah.
Finally got his wits about him and had enough of Dusty Baker. And I bet what did it is when he decided to start a guy who'd pitched 40 innings the whole year in a one-game sudden-death playoff game.
Yep. That was the...
Who then couldn't even hold the ball in his glove.
He was so unnerved.
When the fans were chanting his name.
So unnerved by that.
I'm wound up.
Quite frankly, I'm going to miss Dusty Baker and his awful managerial style.
I'm not gonna miss
his wristbands, and I'm not gonna miss his desire to hit our best player square between the shoulders every time we face off against them. But I will.
Well, we'll see. Maybe that wasn't Dusty Baker.
Maybe that's a very valid point. I guess this will be like
maybe Ryan Hannigan just has an attitude.
He's going to give McCutcheon the business. All right, too much talk about Dusty Baker. Let's talk about more important things. Before we get talking about the Tribe, though, I want to let everyone know that you may see some new authors posting on the website besides just Jason and myself. Do not be surprised.
Do not be alarmed.
These are people that we have sought out who have...
They have passed our...
They are rigorous.
Our rigorous vetting.
Interview question, can you put together a complete sentence? If you can do that, you're probably, and you have an interest in baseball.
Here's a login.
You're probably qualified to write for us.
Not exactly, but close.
I will say we are being a bit hyperbolic there with the writing. But so we, on a serious note, we have been looking for writers, and we've found a great one with a young man named Chris Bradley, who will be writing for us at Tri-State of Mind Baseball. Chris is a soon-to-be attorney. So
he's a graduate of Duquesne Law School.
So he's waiting for his bar
results.
We'll
leave it at that, yeah.
And so we're really excited to have him on board. He hopes to provide some minor league coverage for us, as well as provide some legal insight on the more, as he likes to call it, the more mundane business side of baseball, which to me is really interesting because the business side of baseball is dealing in millions of dollars. So that makes it more exciting. But he actually lived in Pittsburgh for a period of time. And while he was there, he wrote a great article for the Law School magazine about the legal ramifications of Alex Rodriguez's role in the Biogenesis scandal. So, and you can see some of his work that's already been posted on the site. He already has coined a term for next year that I want to trend on Twitter, the Pedro Alvarez hat trick.
That's right.
So you can
very proud of that.
Check out the article about the Pedro Alvarez hat trick. And he's covering the Arizona Fall League for us right now. So you'll see some updates from him on the Arizona Fall League on there. So check him out. You can use our new commenting system down at the bottom, which is super easy. We really want people to start commenting on stuff. I'm going to just pimp it to no end. Go comment on some stuff down there with your Facebook logins.
Yes, definitely. And if you're interested in writing.
Yeah, let us know. Absolutely. Tweet at us at TriStateBB. You can send us an email or... if an email
Facebook
is more convenient, you can send us a Facebook, and we give out all that information at the end of the show. So
that's right.
You're gonna have to suffer through and listen till the end.
And it's all on the website,
right? Yeah, it's all
find it all there.
It's all there. It's all there. We're very well put together, well oiled machine over here. All right. So welcome to the crew, Chris. Happy to have you on board.
That's right.
We'll probably be having him on the podcast sometime soon. We'll have to have him introduce himself.
Exactly.
So we'll get him.
We'll have him on talking about the Arizona Fall League here.
Absolutely. So Jason, let's get on to the Cleveland Indians. Now that their season's over, what do we have to talk about? What are we going to be talking about with the Tribe?
Well, today we're just going to look back, kind of a general overview of what went right and what went wrong the last season here in 2013, when we turned from almost 100 losses to almost 100 wins. Pretty remarkable turnaround.
That is.
You know, we were talking before the podcast, and I asked you, how are you taking the Pirates' loss? And you said, well, I'm trying to look at the upside of things, you know, the fact that we made a lot of progress this year. Of course, you want to win, but only one team gets to win everything, so you got to build, you know, some momentum here. And that's kind of the way it was with the Indians, to go from a just sorry end to 2012, Manny Actifired, Sandy Alomar, walking around the dugout with guys like Aaron Cunningham and stuff in there.
Aaron Cunningham.
And to go, you know, 92 wins, wild card game, everything. So we want to talk about how we got to that point. And one of the big reasons for that we talked about all year, and we want to continue to talk about, is the surprising starting rotation that the Indians were able to put together. When you look back, and I have an article, I've written two pieces to my postseason recap series on the website, one on the starters, starting rotation, and one on the bullpen. And when you reread the article about the starters, it breaks it down. And when you look at it, there was not a single member of the Indians rotation going into last year that you were like, yeah, that guy's going to be all right. Like, we know that spot's going to be all right. Because you didn't have that with Masterson. You certainly didn't have it with Ubaldo. Kazmir hadn't pitched in the professional setting in 2 years. I guess technically the Sugar Liansky eaters are professional. He was getting paid, but
not major league.
Major league setting, yeah. Couldn't count on McAllister for much more than being a four starter. You know, I mean, that's all he had ever proven he could be. So you get a return of a dominant Masterson, which, I mean, I don't think we need to explain the impact having a number one starter who you can count on to stop losing streaks, to give you long outings to save your bullpen, to silence good hitting teams. It just changes the whole rotation.
Right. And that's what you want from a number one starter. That's right. What makes your team have a number one starter. Let me ask you this, because I'm always curious to hear people's perspectives on this too. Do you think, is there a difference between an ace and a number one starter?
Of course, it's really hard to quantify, you know, that. But I think in subtle ways, there actually is, you know.
I totally agree with that too.
I think Justin Verlander in his, not this year, but previous years, Clayton Kershaw this year, Steven Strasburg when he's right, those guys are aces. They're the kind of guys that you literally think every time they go out could throw a no-hitter, legitimately think they could pitch a complete game shutout every time, you know, like a David Price. Justin Masterson has the ability to no-hit someone every time when he's right. But as we know, he has that goofy kind of arm slot. His pitches have a lot of movement. He can be very wild, and that can be good and bad. And when he's right, he can be an ace. I mean, we've all seen him go out there and just make people take silly, silly swings. He's not quite there yet, and I don't know if he can actually get there.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do think there is that difference. I mean, Ubaldo, when he was right with the Rockies, he was bridging on that ace. He wasn't quite there, but it was like if he did that another year and two in consecutive, he would have
been that ace.
Adam Wainwright, you know, like I hate to bring up Adam Wainwright after last night, but that performance,
that's what you want
in an elimination game. That's an ace.
That's what you want from an ace. Absolutely.
Well,
let me ask you this too then. So you have these players that are all of a sudden turning their careers around in Cleveland. What's the one underlying factor? What do you think is the reason for the turnaround from these players?
Well, I think the factor that is behind all of it really is Mickey Callaway. You know, we saw Justin Masterson be dominant when he had Tim Belcher as his pitching coach. We saw a couple of their starters make strides with Tim Belcher. Then Belcher took a different job in the Indians organization. We kind of saw them all fall back a little. Now we see Callaway and they develop again. And I just, it's not, it can't be a coincidence, you know, that you see Masterson return to form, Kazmir resurrect his career, Ubaldo finally gets straightened out. Guys like McAllister and Kluber turn in. I mean, there was a time for over half the year when Kluber was just dominant. And from what I hear from people who have, you know, insiders in the Indians organization, they've always thought that Kluber had probably the most dominating stuff, which is actually strange. You know, nobody thought of that about Corey Kluber, but this is the guy, Mickey Callaway, who could finally get him straightened out, you know, kind of get that, you know, get ahead in the count, dominate hitters with your breaking balls, your cutters, use those pitches as your out pitches. And whatever Mickey Callaway is doing, I hope he keeps doing it, and I hope he fixes Trevor Bauer the same way he fixed Ubaldo Jimenez.
Now, Mickey Callaway, he's not that old, is he?
No.
He's
like, and he's relatively unknown before. I mean, nobody knew who he was before this
he's
year.
Is he like 40 years old, something like that? I mean, he's not that
I'm
old.
Gonna, without looking it up, I'm going to say, yeah.
I mean, I remember when he was pitching.
Yeah.
Who he pitched for the Rays, maybe?
Oh.
Or something like gonna that.
You're
going
to make me look it up. And I think, looking out in the future, not this year. He was born in 1975.
So he's what? That's 38.
So looking out in the future, he's the kind of guy that you hope develops a Dave Duncan, Tony La Russa relationship with Tito and isn't like, all right, I'm going to go get my own job
moving
somewhere
on to
else.
Pastures.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Obviously, one great season as a pitching coach doesn't get you that, but one or two more, and you're going to have people pounding down your door to come help their team.
Right.
And yes, he did pitch for the Rays. The Devil Rays.
The Tampa Bay Devil Rays.
Anyways.
The Greg Vaughn era Devil Rays.
Oh, Greg Vaughn. The flip side of all that positive talk is the Indians' bad bullpen.
So we got the starters all fixed.
Yeah, we got starters all turned around.
Starters good. Maybe we focus too much on the starters because the bullpen, which we, at the beginning of the season, had talked about as a strength of Cleveland,
right,
was a... Am I exaggerating too much when I say it was a complete disaster this season?
See, and that's what I struggled with when I wrote my bullpen article. Like, how exactly do I term this? There were times where it was an absolute train wreck. I mean, there were times when even Cody Allen and Joe Smith couldn't get anybody out. It was literally like, you know, you knew on those nights why Tito so badly wanted to carry eight relievers, because he's like, I just don't know who's going to get anybody out. I just got to keep, nope, all right, you're done. How about you? Nope, all right, next guy. And we all thought, you know, maybe Perez will be bad. You know, right. I think we were prepared for that. But we thought, well, Pastano will step in. And then you've got Smith, and then you've got Cody Allen, and maybe this Brian Shaw kid will be all right. And Matt Albers will mop up some innings. And, you know, left-handed relief was always a question. You know, ever since Rafi Perez left, and had that shoulder injury, Tony Sipp was not the solution. So that really, while it looks kind of bad as you're throwing Rich Hill out there to walk the bases loaded, it's like, boy, I wish we had Tony Sipp, but we forget that was Tony Sipp's MO too. You know, he was basically a power version of Rich Hill. Like, either I'm just going to strike the side out, or I'm going to make Carlos Santana play Ole chasing balls to the backstop. I mean, so, Pastano, I mean, he's a question mark next year. You can't count on him for anything right now.
Which people were talking about Pastano at the beginning of the season, like he was the next coming of
Jonathan Papelbon or
Mariano
something.
Mariano Rivera, yeah. Vinny Pastano's the next big thing.
Which he had several years of just amazing outing after amazing outing. And now...
Do you have any thoughts about what it was with Pastano? Because I've had my underlying theory about what I think, why I wasn't huge on Pastano to begin with.
Well, see, here's the thing with Pastano. he averaged over a strikeout an inning his whole dominating. He had a string of appearances over almost, I think, two seasons where he had a strikeout every appearance. He was a power, and I'm using air quotes, power pitcher because of those strikeouts. But he actually didn't throw that hard.
Yeah, he's not a blazing fastball right. thrower.
And it was deception from that short arm,
that weird ear slot arm angle that he takes.
Right. And so he's always, we found out this year, always had elbow troubles.
Discomfort. Yeah, he said he's had that for as long as he can remember, didn't he?
Right, yeah, that's what he said, I believe. And so to me, it's a combination of that finally flaring up, messing with that either arm angle or what velocity he did have. And I'm sorry, once you take 2 or 3 miles an hour off a 94 max fastball.
Right. He's sitting like 89, 90.
Right. Now, and of course, the theory was like, well, his 94 looks like 97 because of that arm angle.
But that arm angle was the problem to begin with.
Well, and see, it's kind of this, it just keeps
Soylent
going.
Soylent Green is people.
So that, to me, though, that's the answer to your question. It's this combination of this goofy arm angle that creates deception, hides the fact that he doesn't have overpowering velocity, and what we didn't know is this underlying elbow problem. And when that flares up
and starts ticking away at his velocity,
all these other things...
Right.
Then become you exaggerated.
Start
and
adjusting
now,
your mechanics to try and compensate for right. the, and that's when everything starts, yeah, falling apart.
Is that basically your...
That was my whole, yeah, that was yeah. it. I was hoping you'd get to the arm angle, but if you didn't, I was ready to pounce yeah. on it.
So, we do, however, though, have great years from Brian Shaw and Cody Allen. So, when you look at the bullpen next year, those are the guys you can count on. I'd love to count on Joe Smith, as we talked about last week, but he's a free agent, so you're going to have to pony up some serious dough for a guy who's rung up three consecutive sub-3 ERA seasons.
Which you have gone on the record and said you are in support of.
I am in support of that.
I'll find an organizational guy to take his place. I'm sorry, but I will not pony up for a...
Here's the problem. You've got Sean Allen. Do you count on either one of them to close?
Yes.
I think you could count on Cody Allen to close.
Yes.
So now you're going to put Shaw in the eighth inning. And now you got nothing. You got nothing. Nobody else in that bullpen other than Zebchinski is coming back.
Well, that is kind of tough.
You see what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah. If
like
you don't have
Joe
Smith coming
other
back.
Other than Perez. Perez is... under control, right. The classic under team control. I'm not paying $10 million. I'd rather put that money to Joe Smith
than Chris Perez. Oh, I absolutely agree with that.
Right. So my point is, I don't think you want Joe Smith to close. And I know it's crazy to pony up a bunch of money for the guy who's not going to be your closer. But if you put him in the eighth inning...
I think it's just crazy in general to pony up money for a middle relief pitcher.
It is. It's tough. Don't get me wrong. But my point is, Preston Gilmett, CC Lee, Kyle Crockett, who we'll get to in a minute, these guys can fill spots. But do you really want to count on them in the seventh inning?
It's a very valid point.
You can't count on Nick Hagedone right now.
I would not want to be counting on some guys whose names you have in the notes that I don't recognize.
Exactly.
That's what I would
that's
not
my,
want.
And that's my point, why I think maybe you have to pony up for Joe Smith.
All right, valid point. So let's get on to these guys, because you have Zebchinski in there, but
yeah.
Who's this Crockett, Davy Crockett? What's his name?
Kyle Crockett. Not Davy Crockett.
All right.
Kyle Crockett is a guy they drafted out of Virginia this year in the draft in the fourth round.
Gotcha.
They assigned him to Mahoning Valley.
Ooh, the Scrappers.
Yeah. He pitched 9 1/3 innings there, struck out 16, didn't give up a run. So they said, okay, let's try it at Lake County. So he pitched 5 innings there, gave up 1 run, struck out 7. Well, let's try Akron. And they bumped him up there, 10 1/3 innings, no runs, 9 strikeouts. So in his first taste of professional baseball, 24 and two-thirds innings, 32 strikeouts, 5 walks, and 1 earned run.
Across how many levels?
Well, 3 if you count low A and high A.
Yeah.
Low A, high A, double A.
Low A, high A, double A, yeah.
And he's left-handed.
That's a journey. How hard is he, a hard thrower?
You know,
do you have any information?
I'm not sure about that. I would assume, based on the gaudy 11.7 strikeouts per 9, he throws hard. But I'm not sure about that right now. But I think he is a guy that they're looking at for next year. There was even talk of calling him up in September. Just kind of like, well, let's see what happens. You know?
Why not?
I think it, you know, Zebchinski's under contract for, I think, 3 more years. I think this is his first year of arbitration. So he'll be around, and that's good because he had a very, very good end of the season in Cleveland. But I think they'll probably try Hagedone again as the second lefty with the idea of, if you can't do this, you've got 3 chances and you can't do it, and we got a kid who's nipping up behind you here real quick. So I think we might see Kyle Crockett in the bullpen next year. I do want to talk about the offense real quick, because it was a flashpoint, I guess we could say, all year for criticism. Inconsistent offense. They don't have that big bat in the middle of the lineup. Well, first of all, you know, inconsistent offense, that's kind of hard to judge objectively. I think we'd probably stump Ben Jedlicek if we said, could you tell us how consistent the Indians' offense is? I mean, what does that even mean?
Right.
Because some days one run's enough, and then some days 10 runs isn't enough. So how do you judge what's consistent and what's not, you know? What they did have is a 1-9 approach. They don't have a big bopper. I think, you know, for most of the season, Mark Reynolds was their home run leader. For at least a month, even after he was DFA'd, he was still their home run leader. But this idea of, we have to find a guy to hit 40 home runs in the middle of the lineup. Post-steroid era, those guys...
How many of those guys are...
They're not out there.
Just lurking around waiting
just
for
not
a job. Grow.
I mean, Brady Anderson isn't growing on trees anymore.
Our 50 home run leadoff hitter.
Yeah. So I think in some ways the Indians front office is recognizing that reality and saying, okay, A, those guys aren't out there. B, we can't afford that guy. The only way we're going to get that guy is if we draft and develop that guy. But what we can try to do is put together a 1-9 where everybody has power. Everybody can drive in runs. Almost everybody has speed, you know, where it doesn't matter. Almost the lineup flips over at every point. You know, like if Michael Brantley gets on base, our speed guy's on base. Drew Stubb gets on base. Mike Avila gets on base. Kipnis, Bourne. I mean, they can all steal. So it's like every lineup spot almost, or every other, sets you up for a leadoff type situation. And my proof of that, I guess, is they were actually tied for 4th in the American League in runs scored, which I guess is the best measure of an offense, right?
Yeah.
Nothing else really matters other than
how many runs you scraped across.
So, and I'd like to point out, in my prediction piece, I predicted they'd be in the top 5 in runs scored.
Chalk it up.
Real quick, things got a little better on defense with Yan Gomes showing up at catcher all of a sudden.
You know what? The best thing to happen to Cleveland all year this year,
Yan Gomes, Chris Antonetti?
No.
Traded Ezequiel Rogers.
I mean, that was a brilliant trade. Oh. Who's catching before Yan Gomes?
Lou Marson.
Yeah, jeez. Yeah. How quickly we forget sweet Lou Marson. Sweet Lou just gets plowed over at the plate.
Let's point this out. Do you remember who plowed Lou Marson's head back into his thorax?
No, who was it?
Desmond Jennings.
Oh, yes. Thank you, Desmond Jennings.
Who delivered the death blow in the wild card game with the 2-run double.
Life is cruel sometimes.
Right. See what I'm getting at?
It's all coming full circle.
It's coming full circle.
We need to send Desmond Jennings a fruit basket. and also a put a very hurtful note inside of it for scoring that run.
Yeah. Despite the emergence of Yan Gomes and how that helped things, Asdrubal Cabrera, man, he's just a train wreck at shortstop. I can't stand to watch much more of that. I really can't. And Chisenhall, you know, he has a really good arm, but his glove is just failing him at third. And as I put in the notes, he just can't hit enough to justify that. I mean, we talk about Pedro Alvarez. When you lead the league in home runs and you make all those errors,
we can turn our heads.
People will mumble their way out of that situation. But when you can't even hit like 240, no, nobody's going to put up with that. I don't know if we want to get into the prospects now, because we've probably gone past what I had talked about, but just real quick, if we look back at the year,
your prospects had some ups and downs, right?
Yeah. Just to kind of really briefly summarize, and we do have the updates to our top 20 prospects coming out here in the next week or so on the site. But to summarize, prospects whose stock fell this year, Mitch Brown, Dylan Howard, Chun Chen, Elvis Araujo, Scott Barnes, and Trevor Bauer. If you notice, five of those are pitchers. Prospects whose stock rose this year, I'd say Jose Ramirez, Kyle Crockett, Bryson Miles, Anthony Santander, Carlos Moncrief, and Danny Salazar. Only two of those are pitchers, and one's a reliever. And one's had a history of arm problems. So, point being, you know, that kind of, in a quick way, we'll talk a lot about prospects over the offseason, but in a quick way, that summarizes the Indian system. You've got a system that's really making strides position player wise, but is still not doing the job developing pitchers. And we heard Joe Maddon, I think after the wild card round, someone asked him about how do you continue to, you know, compete and make the playoffs and advance in the playoffs year after year in such a low payroll? Well, because we develop our own pitchers. He's like, you can't compete in this league unless you have cost-controlled pitchers who are effective.
And that's why David Price probably won't be wearing a Rays jersey next season.
Exactly. And that's why Ubaldo Jimenez probably won't be wearing an Indians jersey next season either, because they're not going to pay the $70 or $80 million it's going to take.
But I can tell you who David Price is going to bring in. Probably three young arms that they're right. going to stock up on that,
and they're going to hope one of them at least pans out.
Yeah.
So, like I said, we'll talk a lot about prospects in the off season, but and we'll talk about the Arizona Fall League certainly in the upcoming weeks. But the Indians still need a lot of work developing pitchers. But outfield and middle infield has really come a long way in boosting their system. So. That's about it, I think, this week for the Indians.
All right, well, let's talk some Bucco baseball.
Now, the Pirates.
It was a sad day today.
It's raw it was, right now.
It's an open, festering wound at the moment to lose in that fashion in Game 5 of the NLDS. But I have to say, it's still an amazing season by the Pirates. Even if you look at, and I feel like I was somewhat optimistic as a Pirates fan. I think I predicted the Pirates at 83 wins at the beginning of the year, which was a little ahead of where Zips had projected them with the 79 wins they projected or whatever the Zips projection was. So I was somewhat optimistic, and they completely exceeded my expectations.
Yeah.
You know, I was expecting a winning season. That was what I wanted. And they were five games away from a potential World Series.
Right. They won more than 90 games.
Right. What more do you want as a Pirates fan? You can't be upset.
Right.
You just can't be upset.
Now, are you upset about... I'm skipping ahead in the agenda. Are you upset about that hanger that Garrett Cole threw to David Freeze?
The fattest
that I could have put
seen?
Into the gap, if not the seats.
Just right in his wheelhouse, too. Just inside, right at the belt.
It's a perfect spot for you to turn your hands and just rip that ball right through.
Boy, did he lace that. Yeah. Other than that, he pitched a good game.
I mean,
it wasn't like he pitched a bad game. And we've been saying that a lot this season. It wasn't like these pitchers have been going out throwing bad games. It's just that when they don't throw an amazing game, there's no offense there to support them.
Right. And you had Wainwright,
who was just shoving,
flashing his ace.
His fastball is ridiculous because he can throw a fastball at 89 miles an hour and then pump it up to 94 miles an hour. And our poor hitters, you could just see the looks of confusion in their eyes as this 90 mile an hour fastball magically transformed into a 94 mile an hour fastball the next pitch.
And not to dwell on Adam Wainwright, as we are not we don't cover the Cardinals. But did you see on TBS after the game when they showed
No, because I went to bed immediately after the last out.
Well, then I'll tell you.
Please tell me. Enlighten me.
They showed the three different deliveries out of the windup that Adam Wainwright used in that game.
Oh, just.
There was one where he brought his hands up over his head and his normal delivery. One where he brought his hands up over his head excruciatingly slow and brought the ball to the home plate if you're the hitter. And then there was one where he all of a sudden didn't put his hands over his head, just boom, two-part delivery.
And what's hitting all about?
Timing.
Hitting is all about timing. And what did he do? Disrupted everybody's timing.
So you get all these different deliveries, different release, you know, different rhythms, plus the fastball going up, down in velocity.
It was ridiculous. It was one of the... As a Pirates fan, it pains me to say that it was one of the best pitching performances I've seen, but it was a phenomenal outing by Wainwright.
And that's why you've got, you know, Pedro striking out, waving at balls in the dirt in the ninth inning. Because he's just like,
you have no idea what's
I don't know what's going on right now.
I'm just going to swing my bat and hope it runs into something that happens to be in the strike
zone. Which is basically like what Marlon Byrd did in that at bat prior. He left one up and he just managed to barrel it up.
Right.
You know, it was just like, I think if you slowed that down, Marlon Byrd's eyes are closed. He's just like,
I've probably got an equal chance.
Here's the open.
Eyes open or closed. But Cole threw five innings yesterday. You know, he gave up that. Basically, it was one mistake his whole outing came down to.
Right.
You know, you take that hanging curveball out of the equation there. And
because he only gave up two runs.
Right. In the five innings, he gave up two runs, three hits, and a walk.
Melanson burned you a little bit.
Well, at the end of the game. But
because you didn't need that, but you know what? It was a foregone conclusion almost at that point.
When Freeze hit that home run, there was that little part of me in the back of my head that went, you might as well not even watch the rest of this game because we know how it's going to end.
But don't you think, though, that that's a little bit... That's what the good teams have in their favors. The Goliaths to the Pirates' David. You know, it's like going into that game in St. Louis, game five, you're going to pitch your rookie. They're going to pitch their Cy Young winner. You're already like, oh, boy. Right?
Right.
Like we can't leave a hanger to David Freese if we want to win this one. And so when they do it, it's like they're fulfilling that, not destiny. That's not the word I'm like, but that, like what you already imagined was going to happen. You're like,
it is a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Right. And so then you're like, see, whereas if the Pirates had scored first, you know, or taken a sizable lead, if they hit the two-run home run off Wainwright, I think Pirates fans would still be watching the game going, oh,
when's it going to happen?
Two runs isn't enough. Enough.
Yeah.
But when the Cardinals get two runs, you're like, I might as well go to bed.
Yeah, this game's over.
This is done.
We're a very self-aware fan base, I feel like. 20 years of losing makes you very realistic about
self-defeating.
Self-defeating.
But I understand because I'm a Cleveland Indians fan. Now,
you look at Gerrit Cole and he's pitched in two huge playoff games this season.
Right. This is what I'm going to get to. You can't look at that, though. Like you said, he had a great outing and you go, man, I'm glad we didn't throw Burnett. I mean, you can't be thinking that.
No.
Because two runs in five innings.
And it's two runs on one mistake. That's the thing. Right. It's one mistake. He was fairly clean and efficient the rest of the game.
Right. And so to me, that's a win. Both for the Pirates' future. and for basically Clint Hurdle's gamble. You know, it's like he made the right call because it could have been ugly. Yeah. If there's anybody but Francisco Liriano, all your other choices, it could have got ugly.
Right.
Game five in St. Louis. So I think, you know, like you're saying, Cole pitched really well, and he tried to let the Pirates get back in that game. He didn't blow up.
Exactly.
You know
it
what
was,
I mean?
It was just one mistake. It was one bad pitch. One very poorly located, awfully located.
And it would have been so easy in that atmosphere with the old ladies screaming that we had to see all the time on TBS, right?
Those sexy broads.
Yeah. So easy, like the next pitch to serve up another gopher ball.
Right.
To just not have your head quite in it. I got to get ahead. And you try to just groove one over. And if you're a hitter, that's what you're waiting for right there. You're like,
you're wanting him to come at me.
Come on. You got to throw a strike. I'm going to be ready.
Right.
But he got you out of it, you know, and he tried so hard to keep you in that game. So I think it was a win, you know, for the future of the Pirates, basically, because it was another great start in a pressure spot for Gerrit Cole.
Right. And that's coming out of, you know, his game two, where, you know, Pittsburgh, one of the points that I saw in his last start, Pittsburgh came out in the third inning at home, put up 3 runs on the board. And Gerrit Cole comes out that inning and just sits down the 8-9-1 hitters in order and was just like,
right,
I got this. It's over. Let's get our sticks back out there and see what we can do. And I think, again, if he doesn't make that pitch to Freeze, we're having a completely different discussion today. If he doesn't make that one mistake.
Well, see, that's what I'm saying. What if Pittsburgh spots him?
Right. If they put 3 runs on the board for him, he can give up that 2-run home run.
And he maybe just shakes it off.
Maybe you don't have to pinch hit Gerrit Jones for him. What a waste of an at-bat, by the way. Gerrit Jones. So, you know, maybe he ends up going 7 innings.
Right.
And
right.
So, you know, obviously you'll never know. But it could have been a completely different game if he doesn't miss with his location so awfully to David Freese. So
he just wouldn't give in with that curveball.
He wanted to show everyone.
I don't remember who he walked before that. Who scored on Freeze home run?
Was that Yadier? Yadier was hitting fifth. Did they go Yadier to Freeze?
I'm not sure.
I'd have to go pull.
But whoever it was, he was like, "I'm going to get you out on the curveball. I'm going to get you." No, you walked him because you wouldn't give in. You know,
right?
He didn't challenge him when it went 3-2. And I understand, you know, the old, "Well, if you throw it 2-2, you gotta you'll throw it 3-2." Sometimes. You know, I mean, I understand you don't want to get beat because you had to put one over. But as we talked before the podcast, Cole has such an effective fastball and slider. And it just seemed like he kind of fell in love with that curve for a brief 2-batter window, and it cost him.
It was John Jay, by the way. John Jay walked. So it went Yadier to John Jay to David Freese. Yeah, that was just, I don't know. And in the dugout interview when they were talking to Hurdle had said that it was a slider that he had thrown. But here's what I'm saying. It was like 82 miles an hour, I think it was. It was recorded as on the clock. That is not a slider. That is not a Gerrit Cole slider.
If that was the slider, then I know why David Freese deposited
so
it in the bleachers.
Because that's not a good slider. Yeah, it was an 82 mile an hour. I don't know. Maybe he's experimenting with the new pitch in the postseason.
Think he just didn't. Whatever he was trying to throw, whether it was a curveball or a slider, he didn't snap it off well.
Yeah.
And he just left it. And David Freese said, "Thank you very much."
That's what they call low hanging fruit right there.
Yeah.
Beggars can't be choosers, though, David Freese. Good for you for taking advantage. So,
David Freese, man, Mr. Postseason.
He is. So another thing that I wanted to touch on that I thought was kind of neat was that Pedro Alvarez, my dear friend.
You're testing me right
my
now.
My dear friend, Pedro Alvarez.
And his, yeah, okay.
And his type 2 diabetes. Pedro Alvarez became the first.
He leads the league in home runs. Still can't stop making fun of him.
He doesn't really have type 2 diabetes. He came into camp out of shape, and that's just, they asked you to play winter ball. Just do it. Anyways, Pedro Alvarez became the first player in the history of baseball to drive in a run in each of his first six postseason games.
Oh.
In the history of baseball.
Look at that.
That's pretty wild, I thought. Baseball's been, they've been recording statistics for a long time. Yeah. Kind of shocked that's the first time that's ever happened. So the thing that I like, that one of the writers told Pedro Alvarez that he had accomplished this feat, and his response was, but at the end of the day, we were on the losing end. That's all that matters, is trying to win ball games, and all that personal stuff doesn't really mean anything.
Including my 34 errors.
Yes. Those errors,
they don't count either.
I'm just washing my hands.
See what he's doing?
That was good. Deflecting.
See what he's doing?
Deflecting praise these and things, criticism.
These things don't matter. And so, if we're going to throw the baby out, we might as well throw the bathwater out, too.
Oh, that little sneak. I like him.
See?
Oh. So, Pedro.
Pedro Alvarez has hired me to represent him in his contract negotiation, by the way.
So here's my question for the day, as a Pittsburgh Pirates fan. So put yourself again in this hypothetical Pittsburgh Pirates.
Okay, I'm there.
You're there. He's there.
I'm in Pittsburgh now.
How do you feel?
I'm a Yinzer.
If you're a Yinzer, how do you feel about the Pirates going forward?
I'm a little nervous because we just won a bunch of games. We had a really great season in what turned out to be the best division in baseball. And I really am hoping that when I come out and win 87 games next year, that this year doesn't get thrown back in my face as me sliding backwards. Because here's my problem. You're going to have Gerrit Cole, which I think will be a net plus, obviously. But there
for
will
a whole season, right?
But there will be some bumps in the Gerrit Cole road, which I think we skipped over. One of the things of a young guy without much experiencing having to pitch twice in one series, and a smart veteran team like the Cardinals figuring something out about him. You know, maybe it was waiting on that slurvy 82 mile an hour.
Maybe it was weight on the 82 mile an hour slider.
But
that,
but you know what I'm saying?
Right. I don't think that. Here's my personal opinion, and again, I might be biased as a Pittsburgh fan. I don't think St. Louis had him figured out. I think St. Louis pounced on a mistake, which is what good teams do. I don't think
having him figured out is too much, but. Well, I think they figured out Mark Melanson, but anyways.
Yeah, that much they may have had that.
They may have figured that one out.
I think they had his picture taped on
but
a dartboard.
My point is, I'm actually saying we're not giving Gerrit Cole enough credit, because as a young pitcher to have
to
face
step up and
the same,
do something like that.
Same team within, like, what, 4 days of each other.
Right.
That's even tougher than going out for your first playoff appearance.
That's what you would expect someone like A.J. Burnett to step up and do.
Right, which brings me back to why I'm concerned about the Pirates a little bit next year. Not concerned, but
reserved.
I'm not reserved. I'm not buying my season tickets yet because I don't know what's gonna happen with AJ Burnett. And in that last start, of course, leaves a bad taste in your mouth, where it's like, I don't care what happens to him. And that's probably a Yinzer overreaction, but I'm sure some people will have it.
Can I tell you what my good friends, they're longtime Yankees fans, and
they want him back.
Sent me a text after that AJ Burnett start.
Is it C?
And they said, this is why Yankees fans used to ride AJ Burnett so hard.
See?
Because we only had to experience it once. They had to experience it throughout multiple postseasons.
Yeah, well, might have a point. But so then, you know, like we've talked about, okay, so Jeff Locke. Number four starter. And then Wandy and his arthritic elbow. Okay. So, Liriano, I hope. Is he under contract for next year?
Yeah, we have him We had him 2 years. He should be $8.5 million next year, and I believe it's incentive-based next year as well. So he has to
say. So I hope that he continues down this road.
Repeats this.
But again, it's like the Indians rotation. You can't, you cannot, in good conscience, look at next year and say, Garrett Cole's going to pitch 200 innings and win 15 games. Francisco Liriano's going to pitch 200 innings and win 15 games.
So would you say that winning, I want to say in a surprising fashion like this, because I would say most people are probably incredibly shocked about the Pirates' success. I doubt very many people in their right mind predicted them to certainly win 94 yeah. games. Do you think winning in this unexpected fashion sets unreal expectations, unrealistic expectations for a team?
I think it might.
Are they going to be media darlings next season going into the season? Is ESPN going to be...
They're
going to
be the popular, you know, sleeper team.
Going to win the Central.
You know what I mean?
Right.
People are going to want to be edgy by picking the Pirates to win the Central, you know? And that's always dangerous.
So that it does. It sets unrealistic expectations. We're going to see this next season.
Yeah.
Where people are going to be talking about this team.
Plus, now, you're going to lose... You're going to lose Marlon Byrd because he desperately wants to go back to the Mets.
He so badly wants to go back to the Mets to experience I don't know what.
Justin Morneau. So my point in all this is essentially that the two major problems that the team had position player-wise are still questions. They were solved for the stretch run but have not been solved long-term. And so, you know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
You kind of go right back to the beginning of this year.
Where?
That's almost where the expectation should be again.
Who are we going to start in right field?
Right.
Is it Tabata? Is it Snyder? Is it Garrett Jones? What's going on?
Right.
Yeah.
And can we count on Garrett Cole to give us, you know, solid innings? What are we going to get from Francisco Liriano? You want to hope that you know exactly, but you can't in good, you know, if you're Neil Huntington, you can't write down, okay, 200 innings from Liriano and 200 from Cole. And with Wandy, you can't count on him to throw 50 innings.
Anything. Right. So that's a lot of big question marks that we have.
Well, so what about, I'm not the beat writer.
That's,
but I've been answering this
this is why I like you, and this is why I enjoy asking you and putting you in these hypothetical, because you're a very reasonable man.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You and I think a lot alike on things, and
yeah.
That's pretty much echoing my sentiment. If I wish I could show everybody my notes, my big question marks that I have are coming into next season, what's going to happen with AJ Burnett?
I have to tell you, I didn't realize there was a second page. I just scrolled down.
He didn't even read my notes to the second page.
I just scrolled down, and I named all of your questions.
I thought you were going down this list covering them all.
No,
you just. Well, I
stole your thunder. Now I feel bad.
I left Liriano off there because I don't really think he's a big question. I think you just kind of get what you get from Liriano. But you know, the big question marks going into next season. AJ Burnett, is he going to retire? Is he going to come back? If he's not coming back, how do you replace him?
Yeah.
Wandy Rodriguez with his arthritic elbow. Jeff Locke, who finished the season. You know what? You look at his numbers at the end of the season, a composite group of numbers, and if at the beginning of the year you would have gone to someone and said, this season Jeff Locke will throw a...
Yes.
He'll throw 160 innings and give you a 3.5 ERA. Will you take that?
Yes, you take it every day of the week. But like we said last week, the problem is... There was not that composite performance. It was
like someone flipped a switch.
Jekyll and Hyde,
right.
Jeff Locke. It was either good Jeff Locke or I can't get out of the first inning.
And the reason that someone flipped that switch seems to be something mechanical where
right.
all of a sudden he can't locate that fastball, which when you only throw 90 miles an hour is a problem.
Yeah.
You know, he's hitting 92, 93. People are going to hit that. So, you know, you look at Jeff Locke and he's a huge question mark. What are you going to do with him? You know, like, just caution everybody, remember James McDonald. Please just don't get too excited about Jeff Locke.
Oh, yeah.
Let's keep everything.
Like, as a cautionary tale.
Right, as a cautionary tale.
I was going to say, why are we remembering James McDonald?
Because we love him so. But just remember James McDonald, how excited Pittsburgh was about having new staff ace. You know, James McDonald, the next great thing, and he's already washed out of baseball.
He gone.
So you have Jeff Locke. So you're looking at, you know, your fourth or fifth starters for next season. You're looking at first base, what's going to happen when Morneau leaves, and then you're looking in the outfield as well with, you know, what's going to happen when Marlon Byrd books back to New York.
He likes playing with
David Wright,
I guess.
And that's it.
Who else? You got some kid, his last name's Satin, but they pronounce it Satin.
Satin?
And I was like, really? Anyways, that's all I know about the New York Mets.
So those are the big question marks going forward for Pittsburgh is, you know, they're going to have some work to do this offseason. But I think you have a lot of strengths going into next season, strengths that are going to keep Pittsburgh consistently good.
You're going to be right there, you know? Like, I don't expect you to have a losing season, but I think I'm worried that people will not realize how hard it is to win 90 games, what an accomplishment it is to win 90 games, especially when you have to play the Cardinals and the Reds 18 times.
I think Pirates fans will understand that because for 20 years, they haven't been able to win 81 games.
Well, I hope they do.
I hope they're realistic. But look at the strengths that we have. So the core of our team is an MVP center fielder, soon to be MVP center fielder.
Hint, hint.
It's going to happen. And you have a gold glove caliber left fielder in Starling Marte. You have that right field spot, which
is a hole.
You're not sure, but one of the plus sides of Pittsburgh is the super strong farm system that they have.
True.
They have players.
But do they have a right fielder?
They will see your right fielder, and they will raise you a center fielder in all three outfield positions with Marte, who's a center fielder in left field, McCutchen, who is arguably one of the best defensive center fielders in baseball.
You're arguing to a guy who has three center fielders in the outfield. I don't care. Do they have someone who they can put out there?
Gregory Polanco.
Will he be ready next year?
I compare him to Starling Marte. Not this past season, but the season before, where Marte got that late season call-up. And I think Polanco looks to be on that same path, where he's probably going to start next. He finished this season the last two games of the year in Indianapolis, probably going to look next season to start out at Indianapolis.
Right.
There's no reason to repeat him in Altoona. He played well enough there. So potentially there. If not, we were successful this season with Tabata and Snyder and Jones until we got Byrd.
Yes.
You
know,
you may have to suffer through it again.
Yes, although my only point there, as we're running out of time a little bit, but my point there is, and of course, I guess it depends what happens with your other holes, such as shortstop, first base. Because, you know, the problem is that one spot in right field, a Garrett Jones, a Travis Snyder, a Tabata, that's okay. But then when it's like, well, but then we're going to have to play Gabby Sanchez at first and Barmas is short, you've cut your lineup off by a third.
No Barmas next year, by the way.
But that's what
I get what you're saying.
But who's going to replace him?
Right. Jordy Mercer, which I feel much better about having Jordy Mercer at shortstop for a whole season than Clint Barmas. Love Clint Barmas defensively, but go look at their numbers and you'll see
why. You're forgetting the Jordy Mercer incident.
The Jordy Mercer incident of 2013. I'm not forgetting that. I still love Jordy Mercer all the same. Barmas, and don't get me wrong, I like Barmas as a player. I think he's a lot of fun to watch. He just has zero offensive value.
Oh, I know he does.
So I'll be much happier with a maybe...
That's my point, though.
...average defensive shortstop and some offensive production out of Jordy Mercer.
But you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. I understand. Like, it's constantly, you're like the little Dutch boy trying to fill all the holes, and eventually you just run out of fingers.
Right. Because it's like, well, if we get Morneau and Byrd, then yeah, we can put up with Jordy Mercer or Clint Barmas hitting, you know, streakiness. If we have Clint Barmas and Tabata and Andrew Lambeau.
It makes it harder to juggle. It does. But another thing that our team has shown is if we're competitive, they have no problem going out to bring in players to make.
And that's why I was trying to pin you down when you said about the strong farm system going to fix your problem in right field. Do you mean you have a prospect, or do you mean you're going to flip someone for a right fielder?
We could do either. I think Pittsburgh could do either, but I think they're going to have the players coming up next season at some point, and in the immediate future, within the next season or two, to start filling some of these gaps that players are going to leave. So I feel good about Pittsburgh's farm system. I feel good about the players that we have at the top of it, especially. You know, at this point, it's kind of like the whole Tampa Bay philosophy of, we're going to find guys to come in and fill in that we can get the most production out of for the least amount of money until we can get someone good to put in there, until our Desmond Jennings is ready to come up, or, you know, whatever the scenario is for Pittsburgh. So I feel good about the farm system. We have a very savvy general manager. We have an ace at the top of our rotation. Hopefully, Cole.
Whoa.
An ace. Set it right here. Triple-digit fastballs in the sixth inning. Ace. And as
cue up that slurve again.
Yeah. Well, let's stay away from the 82 mile an hour sliders. And, you know, our bullpen this year was obviously a strength. We've seen how that went with Cleveland. So
that'll blow up in your face fast.
You don't want to have to count on it, but you feel good in knowing that you at least have guys in there that have performed at a level that is above average. So I feel good about all of those things.
All right.
So let's wrap it up because we're running out of time. We have some upcoming articles that'll be coming out over the next couple weeks as the season's wrapped up. We'll have our we'll take a look back at our predictions. I'm excited about that.
Oh yeah.
We're gonna see how all of our predictions turned out. Hopefully we'll get Bob back for that one as well. We will be writing about our top 20 prospects in each organization and where they finished up the season, and talking a little bit about some of those prospects that may have put themselves on the radar in our systems as well. Keep your eye out for Chris Bradley's Arizona Fall League updates. Been really enjoying those because I usually don't spend a lot of time following the Arizona Fall League. I have to admit, this time of year gets a little hectic with going back to work and all that jazz. So it's nice to get those. I've enjoyed those last two updates, yeah. Kind of seeing what our players are doing in the AFL. So keep your eyes peeled for those as well.
Hey, so should we tell the people kind of what the plan is for the off season?
Yeah, well, we're going to slow down production a little bit in the off season.
But we will still be podcasting.
We will still be podcasting maybe once every couple weeks.
Every 2 to 4 weeks, I think.
Yeah, we're not gonna set a specific timetable, but we'll still be talking about all the goings on.
Yeah.
Talking about some of our articles specifically and things looking to look forward to next season.
We'll probably be back around World Series time to talk about our awards before they actually are announced.
Yeah.
That would be the next one to look forward to.
Right. And are we going to do a prospect wrap up like we did with our prospect spectacular? Maybe a prospect spectacular part two?
Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. So we got some stuff to keep you entertained.
Yeah. There's going to be baseball stuff coming out.
It's baseball all year round.
Oh, yeah. We don't stop. Area.
Even when there's 8 feet of snow outside.
Oh, yeah.
There's still plenty of baseball to talk.
Oh, yeah.
So keep your eyes peeled. Definitely. We'll keep everybody up to date on the website. We're not shutting down over the winter.
No, we are not going into hibernation.
We work tirelessly to bring you the best baseball news in the tri-state area.
That's right. And we're probably going to get Big Red back to talk about his predictions.
Yes. We got to get the Big Red Machine back, the Ginger Prince. We need him back. I need him back. All right. Well, we'd like to thank our listeners and ask if you're listening to us on iTunes that you give us a rate and review. If you want to check us out on the web, you can do so at www.tsmbaseball.com. You can email us, tristatebb@tsmbaseball.com. You can follow us on the Twitter @tristatebb. And you can check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/TSM Baseball. So for Jason Ruggiero, this is Andy Burdick, and we look forward to talking to you next week.